So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. This episode of the Media Twits is sponsored by the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, which is accepting applications for its entrepreneurial journalism programs. Get more details at bit.ly/CUNYJSchool. That's bit.ly/CUNYJSchool. And joining me from New York is Rafat Ali. How are you doing, Rafat?
Hey, Mark. Doing well. It's been a busy week. Eventful news week in all fronts.
Yes, especially when it comes to Newsweek.
Yeah, that's true. Today they announced that they're closing down the print version by end of this year?
Yeah, I think they said their last print edition will be December 31st, and that next year they will go totally digital only. Which I guess isn't surprising when you think about how much money they're losing. I mean, I heard they're losing something like $40 million a year.
That is crazy. Yeah, I saw that number too. And an iPad, whatever, digital-only version, which how different is that going to be from the Daily Beast? I mean, I guess they're taking from failed model of the Daily, which hasn't necessarily worked in general. The iPad app, but that's a daily, so at least has more topicality from that perspective. I guess they're going to borrow a playbook from The Economist. I think that's probably what they're – because remember, I don't know if you remember, before it got bought, Newsweek was relaunched once again. I think this was 3-4 years ago as The New Economist.
Right.
Which whatever the editor before – Tina, the guy who got ousted, and it was going to be The New Economist, and then that failed, and then they got bought. So anyway, it's a never-ending quest for reinvention, which at least you got to give them marks for that.
Yeah, and then there's rumors that The Guardian itself is thinking about scrapping its print edition. So, you know, and whether that's true or not, and now they have a new digital kind of head of digital that I guess they'd never really had before as far as kind of digital strategy.
Yeah, they did have digital director Simon Waldman, who I know quite well, was responsible for paid content getting bought by Guardian back in the days. They used to have a digital director for Guardian, but that was more on the product side as opposed to sort of having revenues under that person. So I don't know if that's the role that the new digital director had.
Yeah, they made it sound like it was something new, or maybe he's just got a higher post or something. Maybe
something
he's
like
more
that,
in the kind of the executive ranks. But it's Wolfgang Blau, who I've met before actually in Germany, who's doing some interesting work. So I'm curious to hear, you know, what he'll do at The Guardian and where they're going to go. Because
yeah, we should have him on the show. Yeah, I've met him, I think, once before at I think the same conference you might have met him at.
Yeah, Republica in Berlin. I had met him. And actually, I was on stage and he had interviewed me there. But yeah, he seemed very much about alternative media, alternative business models, and trying to come up with new ways of that's what we talked about. And I'll be curious to see how he kind of puts those into action at The Guardian, because they've done a lot of really great digital things. But, you know, what are they going to do with print? You know, that's kind of the question for every kind of legacy media operation now.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've denied that they're closing down anytime soon, because they still get a lot of revenue. I think 2/3 of the revenues are from print in UK. So I don't think it's going to be this year, maybe not even next year. I think it's probably in the next 3-year horizon, 3 to 5 horizon, you would think. But who knows? It may just, I don't know. The dynamics of that industry is changing so fast that the timelines have shrunk dramatically. Like every year they get shrunk.
No question. And I guess on that note, you know, with the question about print and what its future is, you know, we're going to be talking about a new startup called Circa that is really kind of looking at an aggressive kind of aggregation of content as far as a mobile app goes, and trying to kind of reinvent the way that you get mobile news with an app, basically the Circa app that's free, that kind of collects a lot of other stories done by kind of mainstream media outlets. And we'll talk to David Cohn, who's the founding editor of Circa. And then we'll talk about the BlackBerry users. You know, we usually are talking about Android and iPhones when it comes to smartphones, but of course, you know, BlackBerry was the one that kind of ruled the roost years ago. And there was a story recently in the New York Times about how kind of ashamed people are who are BlackBerry users. So we'll talk to a couple people who are still keeping the faith as BlackBerry users and who, you know, still believe that it has some advantages over iPhone and Androids. Let's now turn to the new news app Circa. Circa is a recently launched news app that's trying to reinvent news specifically for mobile. Circa was co-founded by Cheeseburger Network honcho Ben Hu and has Spot Us founder David Cohn as its founding editor. Rather than producing long-form journalism, Circa's focused on providing the basics for a developing news story and sends along updates as they happen. Can it make a difference in the news ecosystem? And joining us is David Cohn, founding editor of Circa. He was the founder and director of Spot Us, a nonprofit that pioneered community-funded reporting. In academics, he's been a lecturer at UC Berkeley's Journalism School and was a fellow at the University of Missouri's Journalism School at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have Sarah Lacey, who's the founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief of Pando Daily, a site that aims to cover everything tech entrepreneurs need to know. She's an award-winning journalist who's covered startups for more than 15 years, was previously senior editor of TechCrunch, columnist at Business Week, and author of two critically acclaimed books. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
So, David, tell us about Circa for people who don't know about it. What exactly are you guys trying to pull off? You just launched this week, and where do you see yourselves now as to what you'll be in the future?
Sure. So, you know, I think Circa is trying to solve a problem with how people sort of keep up with news and sort of follow news stories along. At least that's what most interests me. And we picked the platform of mobile. So it's also sort of designed for someone who is on the go and sort of optimized for that reading experience. But the idea is really, you know, when we have topics that we're interested in that we want to see evolve over time, you know, it could be anything from like, you know, the recent meningitis outbreak to, you know, an election to a court case. You know, stories evolve over a period of time. It could be several days, several weeks, several months. And the best way to consume them right now is to just sort of scan your, you know, reader or, you know, go to your favorite sites and find articles about them. And many of those articles often repeat information that has already been presented to you. So we don't actually write articles. What we do is we tell stories over a longer period of time by breaking down what's happening into, you know, sort of something I like to call the atomic units of news, right? A fact, a quote, a statistic, an event, et cetera. And by breaking it down, we can add more to that so someone can follow a news story the same way they currently follow a person on Twitter or a company on Facebook, et cetera. So as more information comes out, we know what information they already have consumed, what they know, and we can update them with just the relevant information. And it's in that manner of breaking it up that we can kind of do that. And the second part in terms of where we're at with that, I mean, you know, that's kind of an interesting problem to unravel because the way we classically think about, you know, writing a news story is we have this idea of sort of the inverted pyramid and, you know, this sort of nut graph or what is the news peg. And telling a story in this fashion is a little bit different because it has to sort of zoom out a little bit and tell a little bit of a longer view. So, you know, we just launched on Monday. And so the product itself is, you know, a sort of very startup, minimal viable product. You know, I think there's a lot of features and a lot of elements in there that we can add to it. And we've sort of talked about and hope to bring in the future. But I do think we've taken a really solid swing at a problem that has been described. And sort of I think everyone kind of has felt at some point or another the impetus for it was when Ben Hu from the Cheeseburger Network was trying to follow the tsunami, which happened in, I guess it was 2010 now. You know, if you were following that tsunami, he wanted to know – he didn't want to be – told over and over again about the basics of the tsunami, which he already knew. He just wanted, you know, what was happening and a sort of experience that reflected his particular knowledge, you know, as well.
So, Sarah, you wrote really, I thought, an excellent rundown of what you thought about Circa. You saw a lot of potential there, but you also thought that maybe they were trying to fix a problem that didn't need to be fixed.
Well, I think they are fixing a problem that exists. I think they're wrong about what the problem they're fixing is, with all due respect to David and Ben and Matt. You know, I think that there absolutely is a problem with, you know, the tsunami example. Us, you know, when something major happens, I mean, to me, I vividly remember the day of September 11th, you know, scanning obsessively like every news source and every, TV network and finding no new information. And we know that sort of the cable, you know, the cable news feed is sort of turns all of these things into breaking news and exclusives that are like rehashes of the same information. By the same token, you know, after there's like sort of this bright burn around a story, we never hear anything about it again. So to me, what's really cool about Circa is both being able to be updated when there is something substantial, so you don't have to obsessively sort of haunt networks and AP sources, and at the same time, you don't have to lose a thread of a story, even though, you know, the big sort of mainstream media might. So I think those are both really great. I think, you know, had Circa been around for the election, and I think it's a shame that the site launched as late as it did, because I think it could have been a real force in the election. You know, it's reliance on real fact-based reporting and, you know, not having spin and not having opinion. I mean, to me, political journalism really is the part of journalism that's just been overrun with that. And, you know, I see facts, quote unquote, in, you know, political stories all the time. And I have absolutely no idea whether they're reliable or not. And so I've kind of tuned out the election coverage because I feel like journalism is like so let me down when it comes to that. So I think all that's really exciting. I think where I take issue is this view that the article is broken and the way to move forward and the way to have mobile news is without an article. I think it's absurd. I think the way, you know, David was describing sort of this classic inverted pyramid, I mean, that hasn't really been the way articles have been written for a really long time. And I think the only thing that, you know, an article on my site has in common with an inverted pyramid is that it's, you know, words on a page that are the product of reporting. But, you know, other than that, it has very little in common. And, you know, to pretend an article hasn't changed in hundreds of years is absurd. I think also, you know, our user data and my own empirical evidence shows that there's no problem reading articles on mobile. I mean, I just don't think that's the problem they're solving for. So, you know, look, I may be totally wrong, but, you know, even if I'm right, I think it's not bad news for Circa. I think all the time we see startups started that are trying to solve one problem and end up solving another.
Yeah, this is Rafat. I mean, I guess this is a question to you, David. I mean, I think some of the messaging around it, which I think Sarah also criticized, was that there's messaging that came out as we're trying to reinvent journalism and trying to blow up the article. I mean, blogs did that. We did that in our own ways back in the days, 11, 12 years ago is when we started blowing up the articles. I mean, if you want to, that's when really the inverted pyramid got blown up. So do you think it's more a semantic issue and you guys are clear on it, and or is it something else?
No, I mean, here's what I would say. I mean, I think there's certainly times when, you know, I'll be the first to admit that articles are actually a great way to get certain things across, right? Like, so for example, I think really good narratives, you know, stories that, you know, touch on human emotions, that tell, you know, the story of someone going through, you know, some life event or something like that. You know, I actually think articles are the best medium for that. And you know, Circa, right now, we're not trying to do those kinds of stories. I think we are trying to do, you know, as Sarah mentioned, for political news, you know, we really break it down into facts and quotes and events to sort of like try and steer clear and you know, break out fluff so people can just find out what's happening. The other thing I'd say is you know, I think the distinction is, you know, one, I never try and say, you know, we're trying to, you know, save journalism or kill the article. I think, you know, those are very overwrought. But,
well,
you know, what
with
I would
all due
say,
respect, both well, of your founders did. I mean, right. That's what both of them have been saying.
Well, I'm not gonna, you know, speak for them. I'm just speaking for myself here, because I think, you know, journalism is one of those topics where everybody likes, you know, to talk about the death of journalism.
or, you know, the savior of journalism or something like that. I mean, that's just, you know, I think the nature of when people talk about a topic like that. But, you know, what I would say is, when we look at what an article is, I agree that, you know, we have changed a lot of the way we rearrange words in it, but the article is still a bucket, right? I mean, it's a big bucket, and we can put all kinds of things in it, and we can change the bucket around. But I think what we're trying to, or what I find interesting about what Circa is doing is we're really trying to rethink the size of that bucket. And when you break it down into, again, this idea of facts, quotes, stats, et cetera, you're now playing with a different sort of minute-sized bucket, and you can do different things with that once you have started to, you know, be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the clearest analog to me of Circa and what it does well, it's very similar to Wikipedia. You know, the same way you can go broad in Circa and get deeper into certain areas, you know, or I guess that's going to be built out more in the future. You know, that's obvious. People, you know, everyone's experienced sort of the Wikipedia loop where, you know, you start out reading about, you know, I don't know, solar flares and like wind up reading about Nazis 3 hours later. I think that's what's great about it. And I think that doesn't exist in journalism, and it certainly doesn't exist on your phone. But to me, it's like saying that, you know, Wikipedia should be the only source for, you know, high schoolers to write papers on. I mean, you know, even if it's a better, you know, encyclopedia, you know, no one should have written papers based on just an encyclopedia. I see this as a really great tool and adjunct to news, but, you know,
To be fair, I don't think Circa or anybody would say, you know, we are the only news source. I don't think any news source should ever say they are the only news source, right? I mean, that's kind of, you know, I don't think we're trying to replace every news organization ever. That would be a sort of silly proposition.
No, but you're trying to be the primary news source, are you not?
I think we're trying to be a primary news source for certain types of news, right? I mean, again, at the moment, we're still starting off, right? So we're obviously not going to be able to cover everything. There is the possibility later on of, you know, breaking out and providing more content and doing niches and things like that. But, you know, I also think that there are, you know, different kinds of use cases. Like people browse content on the web and are looking for different things at different times. So I do think that, you know, Circa is trying to fit a particular use case for a person who is in a particular, you know, mindset and a particular situation. And so I do think that there is a real problem there for someone, you know, when they're with their phone, and they just want to find out what's happening.
What about the business part of it? I know, you know, you're starting off, there's no ads on it. But is it something where, I mean, now it seems like the big thing is with Business Insider is doing this Brand Insider with sponsored content, and Quartz is really pushing sponsored content. Is that something that you guys might consider doing?
You know, it's funny too, because, you know, having gone from Spot Us, where all I did was think about money all the time, to now Circa, where we really, you know, I think maybe Matt and Ben are having those discussions. I'm sort of stepping away from them. And I also know, actually, as well from Matt and Ben, the real focus right now has been on just producing the best reading experience that we can. That's really where all the focus is on. You know, certainly down the line, I'm sure there are going to be ways to monetize, perhaps through ads or other means, but that's not really the thing that we're discussing or focusing on right now.
Kind of sort of related, not a business question, but one of the things that you guys are trying to do, which is follow the topics, which is whether it's a story or a specific topic. And I know Quartz is sort of organized around what they call passions and stuff. I guess these days we used to call it tags back in the days. But is that the organizing principle for subjects in a story in a site then becomes sort of subtopics that are fluid?
You know, it's a really interesting problem to think about, because we're not, you know, doing these at the topic level, right? We're not just sort of saying, you know, give us health, you know, and it's not a river of news about all things related to health. It's, okay, there's a meningitis outbreak, and this, you know, has been going on for 2 weeks now, and who knows how much longer it will continue for, and we're going to follow it. And what's also interesting is those stories can also then break out into others, right? So we had the main meningitis story, and then we have something called a bridge, which is where, you know, the main story is really just following the, you know, the deaths that have happened, the people who have been sick, and where it's happening. But now there is, you know, a call for, actually the place that the compounder that had the drugs was rated, right, by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and there's also lawsuits flying. So we'll actually create one point in that main story that's saying, that says these things are happening, and that will bridge to a whole new story, which just gives you the details on the lawsuits that are starting to fly and the, you know, calls for regulation that are starting to fly, et cetera, the aftermath, right? So this way, if you're interested in just the main sort of branch and the health issues, you can follow that. If you're interested in the other things, you can follow both, and you can sort of go into detail around points. So whenever we have a point that we can call out as you know, go into detail for, it can become its own story itself, which is also this interesting sort of fluid and organic way of covering the news.
I do think in general we've seen this shift, at least for like the, you know, kind of more traditional media content companies, of thinking less about, you know, this is the thing we cover on this blog or this site, and this is the reader we're speaking to. I mean, you know, I think BuzzFeed is sort of the extreme example of that, where you have, you know, them breaking political news and having, you know, cat pictures. And, you know, I think Jonah has always said the reason those two coexist is because he believes that, you know, this idea of like the Paris Cafe, where someone's reading a book on philosophy and turns around to pet a dog, and that didn't stop becoming, you know, the same person when he did that. I think that's extreme, but I think, you know, the way we think about doing a site for startups is not writing only startup news, because what do startups need to know? They need to know what's happening at the big five, big four technology companies, because that's who they're competing with, that's who they're trying to dislodge, and that's who may buy them or not. So, you know, I think all the news about Amazon is incredibly relevant to startups, but you tell it through the lens of why it's important for startups. And, you know, I think that's a different approach even, you know, than TechCrunch had, you know, 6 years ago or so. So, you know, I do think that people are thinking more about the reader than pigeonholing themselves into a this is what we write about sort of format. And I think that's why you see everyone wanting to have these kind of buckets around emotions or passions or whatever. It's like it's all kind of part of the same continuum of thinking about who you're writing to, how they're experiencing your work. I think also it ties into the shift from really writing for Google's machines to writing for social media.
Definitely. Well, thanks, guys, for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
So now let's talk about BlackBerry users as black sheep. Do we live in a smartphone world dominated by Androids and iPhones? And if so, where does that leave BlackBerry fans who had some of the first smartphones? Nicole Perlroth at the New York Times wrote a recent article about how BlackBerry users are now living in shame. One musician told her, BlackBerry users are like MySpace users. But CIO Magazine's Al Sacco says that having a BlackBerry can still be cool. Our guests are Zvika Krieger, who's contributing editor at The Atlantic, where he coordinates Middle East coverage for TheAtlantic.com, and senior vice president at the S. Daniel Abraham Center for Middle East Peace. He's previously an editor and writer at the New Republic and a correspondent for Newsweek based in Egypt and Lebanon, covering most of the Arab world. Welcome to the show, Zvika.
Thanks so much for having me.
We also have CIO Senior Editor Al Sacco, an award-winning journalist, editor, and blogger who covers the fast-paced mobile wireless beat for CIO.com and IDG Enterprise, with a focus on smartphones, tablet PCs, and other handhelds. Welcome to the show, Al.
Thanks for having me.
So, Zvika, what, you know, you had a pretty strong reaction to the story in the Times. What do you feel like is the feeling out there as far as BlackBerry users go?
Well, I think that, as you can see, the fact that someone who's a former Middle East correspondent and foreign policy expert that was so enraged by that New York Times article that I decided to go outside of my usual wheelhouse to respond in the technology section of The Atlantic. I was pretty frustrated. I mean, it's a complaint that I've been hearing a lot, and I mean, I would certainly agree with the central premise of the article, you know, that the coolness factor and the hip factor of the BlackBerry in no way compares to that of the Android and the iPhone, and I do get dirty looks. Even in D.C., a town that's overrun with BlackBerries, still get those judging looks. But, I mean, I was someone who was lured in by that coolness and that hipness of Android, and I jumped at the opportunity to get an Android. And after using it for a couple months, I just found that the functionality was just so much inferior to my BlackBerry, and that the daily tasks that, you know, were done with so much ease on my BlackBerry were so much more difficult on the Android. And if you want, we can get into a little bit later some of my complaints, chiefly about the keyboard functionality and the battery life. But I found myself switching back to my BlackBerry a couple months later. I had the top-of-the-line Android, and within 2 months, it was just sitting on my shelf gathering dust, and I was back to my BlackBerry, and I have no intention to go back to my Android anytime soon.
Al, do you feel the same way? You wrote a story kind of in defense of BlackBerry users, and I'm sure there are still millions of BlackBerry users, I mean, including around the world. I mean, in some other countries, BlackBerries are like the primary way that people can communicate, and, you know, in emergencies, I know they're a lot better in staying up. It seems like there's a lot of it, and, you know, they've got the dedicated keyboard, like Zvika mentioned. What are the other advantages of BlackBerries in your mind?
Oh, well, I mean, for me, really, it's, as I mentioned in my posts, it's really the messaging side of it, the keyboard, the inbox, all the keyboard shortcuts. That's why I use a BlackBerry. But that said, I use two phones. I don't use just a BlackBerry. BlackBerries wouldn't cut it for me nowadays. I literally carry two phones everywhere I go. You know, my BlackBerry is my messaging phone, and my Android phone is what I do my web surfing, applications, navigation, things like that. But I mean, as far as cool, you know, the term cool, I don't think any smartphone makes you cool. If you're basing cool on a smartphone, then I think you've got some messed up priorities, at least from my perspective. When it comes to cool from a smartphone angle, what's cool for me is taking the time to research the various mobile platforms and spending time with a number of different devices to figure out which one works best for you, really. I mean, cool is making an informed decision based on that research and then being confident enough in that decision to laugh off foolish criticism from other people regarding your smartphone of choice. So, I mean, if you do that research and you find that BlackBerry is the best phone for you, then using BlackBerry is cool, I think.
Do you think, this is Rafa, do you think, and any of you can answer this, that the BlackBerry messaging has been confusing over the last few years and still hasn't sort of caught up to maybe what the opportunity, still now smaller niche than it used to be, to sort of drive that instead of trying to be the smartphone, trying to reinvent themselves as a smartphone?
I mean, if the question is, has RIM fallen behind other smartphone vendors, then absolutely, yeah. And I think there's been mixed messaging. I mean, I think the new CEO at RIM would tell you that. I mean, they're trying to fix that image problem, and RIM is most certainly facing an image problem. I mean, there's no question that people are out in the market, you know, making fun of other people for using BlackBerry. It's happening. It happens to me all the time. I can barely write a post about BlackBerry without getting a comment immediately telling me I'm foolish for writing about it and RIM is dead. So there's that perception out there for sure. But you know, perception is not always the fact of the matter, at least from where I'm standing. There's 80 million strong BlackBerry users out there. That's not a small number.
And I think that I would agree with that. And I think that maybe it was a year or two ago, there was a sort of BlackBerry branding campaign where you saw these, you know, hip, well-dressed teenagers sort of texting with each other and on their BlackBerries and nightlife. And it just felt very dissonant to me. I mean, it seemed like BlackBerry was trying to be something that it wasn't. And as you can tell by the numbers, it hasn't caught on those markets. Something that one of the commenters, my article, of course, garnered a lot of comments. As I mentioned, it's hard to write an article about BlackBerry without spurring the commenters. Someone said that it sounds like BlackBerry is better for a creator of content, and iPhone or Android is better for a consumer of content. And as someone who is a creator of content, as a journalist and Twitterer and such, that would make sense for me. And I think that, as I said before, consuming things, whether you're watching TV or movies or music or whatnot, or just surfing the web, I would agree with that Android or iPhone has a much better user experience for those.
Actually, it's funny that you mention it, because the creator versus the consumption of content, because Nokia has exactly the same positioning, which is our phones are better for creation of content. because of their phone, because they've always had historically had better cameras. As now, of course, others have caught up, but Nokia always sort of was pushing the cameras and stuff. So it's interesting that they're that. BlackBerry is seen as a creator of content, or at least somebody saw it as that.
Well, and I'm guessing what you're talking about, Zvika, is the keyboard and being able to type. You're talking about text creation as far as, you know, being able to tweet faster, write stories, do all the writing, because I'm guessing it's not quite as good when it comes to capturing video or photos or things like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And the point that was made in that post was that if you're looking at market share, there are certainly more consumers than there are creators in that sense of the word, creators. And so it would make sense then that Android and iPhone are eclipsing BlackBerry in terms of market share.
What is it about DC? Why are there so many BlackBerry users in DC? And I know Obama has been a BlackBerry user. I mean, what is it about BlackBerries that just became so popular there?
Well, I'd say it's a fairly simple explanation. I think that DC is a town that is run by government, or predominantly, you know, government agencies, and they are so slow to change. And, you know, once certain software or a certain protocol has been established, the inertia of bureaucracy is just so crushing here that it would really take require a massive sea change for a lot of these HR departments, whoever handles the purchasing, to say, okay, we're going to actually go and do all the research and convince these, you know, huge bureaucracies to change the way that they operate. And so I think that just inertia is the name of the game in DC. And then I'll say probably I'm sort of the armchair sociologist in me would say, you know, DC is probably a little bit less concerned with their fitness and coolness and other major cities like LA or New York, so maybe we're a little bit less bothered by the phenomenon rising in the New York Times.
And Al, you were talking about doing research into, you know, what phones you're going to use, and you decided on, you know, an Android and your BlackBerry. Was there something about the iPhone that you didn't suit you?
I wouldn't say it didn't suit me. I mean, I'm in the position I'm in. Companies send me new devices all the time. I can choose from just about any device I want to use. So I'm in a unique position that I actually get to get hands on with these things for as long as I like. I just don't really like Apple's locking into its ecosystem, the whole iTunes ecosystem. And I prefer to be able to, you know, switch an option on my Android phone, let me download apps from wherever I want, instead of having to jailbreak or root a device in a to get apps from another source that's not official. I really just don't like Apple's ecosystem.
Kind of the walled garden approach, and they exactly. Have to kind of approve everything that goes on it. It's not as kind of as hacker-friendly as Android, I guess.
Right. I mean, the iPhone's a great phone. There's a reason why so many people use it, but it's just not for me.
Fair enough. Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate you joining us.
Sure.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. We want to thank our guests David Cohn, Sarah Lacey, Al Sacco, and Zvika Krieger, as well as our sponsor, the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism and PBS and the Knight Foundation, for making this podcast possible. Be sure to check out all the news, polls, and events at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/idealab and our new site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. We'll catch you next week. Everyone down.